Greetings, everyone. This is a Found All Options Directions for Truth show with Richard Talk to Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Richard. How are you? You sound like you have your voice back about being in all those fires and being traumatized. And I guess I should let you say how you are. You're sounding good to me.
I'm good. I'm much better. And thank you for all of the information. We did a great workup on me recently. What's today? Is today already Tuesday? Wow. You did a vocal print on me and gave me some great information. I've been using that. I started out when you did that workup last week because Sherry built a software on the Sound Health Portal so that people of California, I live in Northern California in the part of California that burned a lot, although I think now we're up to somewhere around 275,000 acres statewide and about something like 7,500 properties burned. And so there was amazing amounts of smoke and really a lot of not only – when people think of fire, particularly because these were properties, homes, the part that people don't think about is you have all the stuff they're dumping on the fire retardant, which is one pile of woo, spooky chemistry. Then you also have everything that goes airborne because you're in these homes, everything that's in that home and everything that home that is burnt is built out of is burning and evaporating and off-gassing and leaking. So I've been pretty flattened by the smoke. I was not burned out, but I did have to evacuate my home for about 10 days. And so that's what Sherry's asking about.
Are things back on track now there for people, or you still got a lot of people with a creepy crud that we could help with?
I haven't seen, people are more so in a state of PTSD. Because, like at the Bioneers conference, I knew a number of the vendors, and probably of the 20 vendors there, at least a third of them had lost their homes. So people are not noticing that they're, having coffee. There's mostly people are in trauma and shock. I mean, almost 10,000 people are out of their homes, or properties have been burned. So they're mostly in trauma. But I do hear it when I'm talking to them. I do hear the wheezy coffee thing, and then I try to send them to the portal to do the vocal print. But a lot of people are still in trauma. It's still pretty fresh. I mean, we still have a couple of fires, not in hazard, but that are not fully contained yet.
Well, I hope we can do more for people. I'll see that PTSD gets up, and that is free for people to test. Now, there's so much going on in the world. It just very hard to keep up with all of the fires and hurricanes and tornadoes and politics and garbage that's going on. We thought we'd bring you a show, a fun show, an educational show, and a way to go to other worlds and other dimensions. So we have two guests today that are going to bring you information about the shamanic journey through Peruvian methods of shamanism. Don Zane Kerfman and Randy Keller. Zane has written a book, and Randy is promoting all of this and doing a workshop here in Ohio. I was in shock that these people were in Ohio, and not only that, but within a few miles of me in nowhere Ohio out in the woods here. So we want them to talk about the journey. We want them to talk about how you can join their workshop, and we'll be talking to them right after we have a couple of announcements. It sounds exciting, and I think a lot will unfold as we go along. Okay, one announcement. We have a two-day class coming up Thursday and Friday this week, and it's going to be on bio diet and nutrition, and we'll be teaching you to look at what you're allergic to. With that also, whether it's an herb or a food or whatever. That two-day class is free, and we will provide the software. People find that really unbelievable that we're doing that, but our wish is for a bioacoustic center in every community so that we can take back our health rights. What other announcements? Oh, there's a big trend going on of the government snatching up your children on trumped up charges about vaccines. I have the hiccups now. So beware, be very wary that when they take your children for some trumped up excuse, they vaccinate them and then send them back home. Richard, I have the hiccups so bad that can I bring you into your announcement? Can I come back to this?
Okay. I'll talk about this was unintentional that I have an announcement about a fire. This has no relationship to the fire that I was part of. This is actually back in Parkersburg, West Virginia. This has to do with actually this is right. Oh, really? I didn't know it was that close. Wow. So this was a fire that now this was as of the 27th. This was a fire that had been burning for 4 days at that point. It was a warehouse in Parkersburg that was owned, that is owned by DuPont. Yes, that DuPont, under a possibly a different corporate, you know, edge, but it's the mothership is DuPont. And they stored, as the fire crew described, you know, finding unlabeled containers inside and outside the building burning. For example, the DEP, which I think is some kind of acronym for the Department of Fire, inspectors found that a good housekeeping was not being maintained at the warehouse. They also found that the company had not developed and implemented a groundwater protection plan that included materials stored at the site. And the phrase from the article, I'll post this in chat, the fire has been burning at a warehouse that's become a dump for things DuPont can't legally get rid of for more than 4 days. And there was a media blackout. And now, were you aware of this, Sherry? I didn't know it was that close to you. Were you aware of this fire?
Have not seen a thing about it.
Isn't that amazing? So this was a fire. I mean, this is a giant. There are many photographs in this article. And you can see the plume of smoke is that really nasty black smoke that occurs when tires or other toxins are burning. I don't know why it's so black. Somebody can explain that. But, I mean, really, a massive amount of smoke, and it was not in the news. It was just not being reported. There was a big, you know, whatever that is, inside, under-the-counter, you know, memo evidently set out, or who knows what. But, I mean, when you see the photographs from this, and you look at the size of fire this is, and the amount of smoke that is produced by this fire, to see it not be in the news is pretty darn shocking. Especially having been through bad fire here, where it wasn't toxic like this. But it's, you know, it's owned by DuPont. They're burning stuff that isn't labeled correctly, all sorts of, you know, enes and hides and hydrides and, you know, bad benzene, you know, who knows? There's bad things burning. They aren't labeled correctly, and this kind of reminds me of when the hurricane happened in Texas and there was a bunch of stuff that was being leaked and fires that were started by pressurized tanks. In that state, the petroleum industry had paid the lobbyists so much money that they basically were allowed to do what, you know, store whatever they want and tell nobody and had no labels so that firefighters would come up to these fires. And I think that may be true here in this West Virginia fire, is that firefighters, first responders, are coming to deal with this fire, and they're dealing with unknown toxins. I don't find any excuse for that. Go ahead.
Well, the first people have a right to know about this, and the first picture I saw of it was from you, and it looks like several city blocks are burning. That's how big the building was. But do you remember when that guy was caught putting illegal fracking water in Dow Lake, right within a few miles of here?
Yeah.
We learned about it from you in California. So they are keeping lots of things from people. They are just raping Mother Earth and what's going on with it. We'll ask our guests about that, too.
Yeah. Okay.
That's incredible that you get that news and we didn't. Okay, two things I wanted to jump back for people with two groups working with us, Sherry Tenpenny, Sherry Tenpenny's group, that is getting out a lot of news about these children that are being abducted by the government. So Sherry Tenpenny, just Tenpenny, you can go on her site, and then National Vaccine Information Center ndic.org, and also they have an attorney that we have had on the show many times, Alan Phillips, and he's got all the things on his site so that you can have this paperwork prepared before these people end up at your door. So please get in touch with those sites and see how you can be prepared, you know, like the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts now. So, Richard, do you have any other announcements?
No, that's enough. I was annoyed enough about the fire. I was getting myself worked up about toxic fires, so now I'll just calm down.
Can you tell Richard's an environmentalist? I had another, I remember. I should write these things down. We're being sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health. We're the largest research center in Southern Ohio, alternative research center, that we know about, probably in all of Ohio. And we invite people in. We stick a microphone in front of their face. We look at the frequencies in their voice, and from there can tell a lot about them. This has been around for thousands of years, I suspect. We just computerized it. And we are working on hives, cancer, hot flashes, Parkinson's, several other things I can't remember at the moment, but it's fun, and we get to share all of that with the public on our website, soundhealthoptions.com, if you want to read about it, and then our workstation, soundhealthportal.com, where you can go and get your voice tested for damages by fire. Right now we have a neuroplasticity to test your brain nutrients that you need. Gardasil, for those people who are ending up incapacitated and infertile from these HPV vaccines, and we can sort of help you back that off. There's stuff up there all the time. Richard, I will make definitely sure that we get up PTSD this week for people. We want to put the idea of your health back into the hands of you, the people, and out of the hands of the government. For millennia, your health has been in your hands and the hands of your shamans, your, what do you call the Indian shamans? We should ask our guests that. But there's always been somebody in the tribe, in the group, that's responsible for people's health. And I think our guests are going to enlighten us about all of that in a way of the Peruvian shamans. They're going to share their journeys and their information and their learning and teaching and healing. Randy Keller is here from Urban Shaman LLC, and boy, I want to know what an urban shaman is. And Don Zane Kirkman is here. He's written a book, and he's going to talk to us about that. They're both followers and teachers of folk medicine and earth-honoring ceremonies. We don't know a lot about it. We don't even know how to describe these people who I have this vision that they live in more than one dimension as we try to live in this everyday world today. So that's as much as I know about them, and I will learn together. Do you have your first question ready, Richard?
I do, and I'll test this both out to both of you, Zane and Randy. What is a shaman? What in your teachings and learnings and in life experiences, how do you define a shaman?
Well, a shaman is actually a Tonganese word from the Siberian region, and it has become kind of an anthropologist way of explaining any culture that is ritualistically based and has a belief in animism or a belief that there is a overlying principle of intelligence to existence itself, that everything actually is conscious on some level and then can be communicated with, and that those communications can lead us into another dimension or another world where the limitations of this particular earth plane that we live in can be overcome.
And
well, like
much
the definition.
Of you, I know. Just that. Let's stop right there and let's break that down, and we'll just talk about that. No, I have a further question. Is much of your experience? The book I've read, and actually I think you both have this. You're both Reiki masters on some level, and you've done that. Did you jump to the Peruvian experience kind of directly, or were you led there, or how did you get to the Peruvian part of the experience? What was the draw to that?
Well, for me, I'm part native, but I was never connected to the native world, really. I was raised white, so... those cultures were not available to me. My father was a Baptist missionary, and my mother was a very gifted kind of intuitive. And that kind of painted things early on for myself. I did receive Reiki early on, and I believe Reiki was a beautiful, beautiful introduction to these alternative states of consciousness. For the Western world, I believe the way that it was arranged and the way that it is taught really opened people up to a deeper experience of themselves and the world around them. And as we all know, Reiki's original purpose was enlightenment. It wasn't really healing; that was just a side effect of its work. But for me, I did work with Reiki for quite a while, and then through an interesting visual experience. I started to receive teachings directly from the spirit world. And I was a little uncertain of the validity of what I was receiving, so I wanted to kind of connect and to research out to see if any cultures had ever done these types of techniques the way that I was being taught it intuitively. And I found that there was a group of indigenous people within Peru named the Quero Indians, and that the Quero Indians were many of these techniques, they used this digestion of heavy energy, this way of bringing illness and tension directly in yourself from a client, and then in a way transforming that into light, into the essence of healing and giving it back to them. And interestingly enough, I started looking for someone to introduce me to that school of knowledge, and I discovered a man named Juan Nunez del Prado, and as soon as I saw his picture, I had seen him in a visionary state a few years before that, so I was pretty sure it was the right path for me, and that's my story anyway in a nutshell.
And how did you... How did you get, when you first had the experience of having visions or, you know, information coming to you from air quotes, unknown sources, I mean, could you go to your parents and say, I had this, what do you think? I mean, they had very traditional belief structures. Were they open to conversation about that with you?
No, not at all. My father actually passed away when I was very young, when I was like 12 years old. But my mother, no, it was, though she is the one who was, had the native lineages, it was something very scary for her. You know, it was something that was very hard for her, as you say, with the traditional background. In fact, there was one time that she was very ill with, like, flu-like symptoms, and she asked me to go ahead and do a healing on her. And when I did the healing, we have, like, a medicine bundle we call a mesa, but I didn't use that. I didn't use any Quechua or exotic-sounding words. I picked up her Bible. I read some healing scriptures out of her Bible. I laid her Bible on her head, you know. And, she matter-of-factly, when it was done, said, well, I don't feel any better. And then I went off and got something to eat, and I came back, and she was outside doing lawn work. And she was just singing and having a great time, and she told me she felt so great. And then it was maybe 4 or 5 hours later that she called me to her house, and she wanted to tell me that she felt condemned because it worked. So that was
oh boy,
that was the environment I was from, you know.
Right. I'm laughing not at you, but I've done work with people where it's like that you do the entire ceremony, you do whether it's ceremony or not, or you try and what I would call strip away a bunch of the symbols that would scare people who are not, or you know, would make them like, ooh, I don't know, and you do something, and then they at the end you do all this and you're really in it, and you can feel the shift, or you're aware of the shift working with them, and then you look at them and say, how do they feel, and they get that response. That's why I was laughing so hard, because you get that like, I don't feel anything different, I didn't notice anything, go away.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like and then an hour later, like you said, they're out in the garden like singing a song, and they're obviously you don't think something's different, you know. It's people's responses is always
different. She was
that's for sure.
She was keen enough to understand there was a difference. It was, you know, I think it's partly because we're raised in a society where things are very, sterilized, not the right word, but things are very homogenized, our experience of reality. And when something comes and challenges our experience of reality, it does send up those warning flags. It does make a person afraid. But at the same time, it's kind of a terror on the threshold, because it's really moving through that terrifying state can lead us into deeper sense of ourselves.
We hope.
We are.
Sorry.
We are getting lots of questions from email and chat, and I'll wait and put them in a clump because they're mostly about how to do this and what happened. But I'm very interested. When I had my first Kundalini experience, and I wanted everybody to know about it, and there was this indescribable peace and openness going on inside me, and people just looked at me like I was Looney Tunes, and I really had to tone it down to even talk to my own family members. So you're going to be doing a workshop. Here's the kinds of questions that are coming in. Can you tell me if these are the kinds of things that are going to go on in your workshop? How do you connect with other dimensions, other worlds? What kind of messages do you get? Are you afraid? Are drugs and herbs involved? How did we lose this information? You can see people are just incredibly interested in the process. So is that what's going to happen in your workshop?
Well, in the workshops, we have a mini type of workshop coming up in November, and it will touch into a lot of those different areas, especially how to enter into a different frame of mind from which you can project yourself into a different dimension and receive information from that dimension. We have kind of what in the East is called an aura, but we call pakpo, or a bubble around ourselves. And a lot of that November workshop will be teaching people how to do maintenance on their own bubbles. And these bubbles are like organs of information. And once we start to work with our aura or this bubble, we are able to pick up new types of information from the world around us and from, other types of spiritual dimensions. And it becomes almost effortless once we really get in tune with this pakpo, this bubble around us. Because it's really, to use a New Age phrase, it's akin to our light body. It's akin to a body that operates in a different level. Now, as far as drugs and herbs go, no, those will not be a part of the workshop. There will be some delicious Florida waters and some incense burn, but it's my goal to really teach people how to enter into those states without those substances. I have no type of judgment against those substances, but it's good for a person to be able to enter into these deep states and to do this work without those things, because as beautiful as they are, they can become a crutch. And they're not really indigenous to North America here. So, you know, it's a little different there. But we will be teaching people how to do maintenance on themselves, how to even take this out into the world and to play with others with it, because it's all play to us. We have a word called puklyai, and it means play. It means the playing out of a ritual, or it means the play of children, and it's even the playing out of courtship between lovers. So we always, even in cases when we're working with someone who's terminal, we need to keep that understanding of play within us and learn how to use that state for all the benefits it can bring.
And one of the things I want to ask you about, when we talk about other dimensions, are we talking about, you know, expanding your bubble of awareness? Although I know you have bubbles, a slightly different reference, but I think it's in that same, you know, I would call it awareness. You're also talking about, you know, we're not talking about going out and talking to ETs. You're also talking about, I believe, like going out into the forest and being
yes.
aware of the trees and the animals and having a connection with that. That is another dimension, I think. Only because we've lost that connection. That's why it seems like it's another dimension. It's really not. It's always there, kind of waiting for us to stumble in and go, "Oh wow, oh, we're back." You know,
exactly.
I don't know what that is.
We're trying to learn to dialogue with nature, and you know, there's an academic idea of a dialogue with nature, and it's about learning an ecosystem and how that ecosystem, you know. How the different elements of that ecosystem come together to produce the health of the environment. But when we're talking in these traditions about a dialogue with nature, we're talking about something quite different. We're talking about how you can go out on a lake, or you can go to a mountain, or you can go for a walk in the woods, and how that lake, mountain, or that forest can tell you something about yourself, something very important about yourself. And it's not the language that we're using on this radio program. It's not a verbal language. It's different. It's first built up of feelings. We first learn to open our feeling sense, and from there we learn these new syllables that are like heavy and light. But not to get too far out there, every person has dialogued with nature. Any person who has ever decided to go fishing one day when they were upset, and while they're out fishing they start to get relaxed and still like the water around them, or any time someone has gone out into the woods and started to feel expanded and just all this energy coming through them and all these good vibes, they're dialoguing with nature. It is something that simple. What we're doing in these classes is teaching people to take a deliberate control of that and then to develop that into a larger sense.
And what are the benefits of having those larger sense, is your feeling? What's your feeling about
well,
that?
Well, there's multiple benefits. One thing is we are so disconnected from nature. You know, we're so disconnected from the very thing that we're part of. You know, there's this idea in the Western world that we are somehow separate from nature and that we're always carving our way out of it and that we always are having to be on the lookout for nature. But in truth, nature is very healing. It's very inspiring. It helps us to see new vistas and new horizons. But it also helps us to grow because there really is a process, and that's I'm sure Randy will talk about the apprenticeship program that we are planning for next year. And in that program, we go and we follow a traditional pilgrimage of what's called the Hatun Karpai, which is the initiations. And we go to different nature sites, and we learn how to communicate with them, how to share ourselves with them, and how to gain the gifts they have for us. And in this way, we start to develop our personal power. And our personal power is everything in this tradition. We believe it dictates how we heal, what we're able to achieve in our lives, and even in the end, how we'll die. So it's all about developing ourselves, and unlike just a mystic who goes, you know, up onto the mountain to meditate, we're wanting to be able to bring this back. And all the shamans and medicine people of the world, they have been charged with this task of learning how to use the sacred or mystical experience as a healing balm or panacea, how to help people grow from that may not be able to tap into it themselves, but how we can serve as a bridge until they can tap into it so that they can start this process of healing and this process of learning about themselves again. And nature is instrumental in us truly learning who we are.
Yeah. I fell into thinking about nature for a moment. I'm quite as Sherry said, as a you know, theme of mine. Oftentimes, I'm announcing things that have to do with the amount of, well, I can't use that word on air, but we can all imagine what that word might be. Stuff that we dump on our planet as if it's a giant toilet bowl, and it just offends me beyond, you know, words that I can use anywhere on air. And I have so much respect and, you know, caring for nature. So as you speak of it, I always sort of like, oh, wow, nature, you know, makes me happy.
Definitely.
Randy, I want to ask you a question about, I think your path or point of origin or how you got to be working with Zane is slightly different. You had a near-death experience in 2011, and then you got into Reiki and other things. How did you... kind of what was your path, and how did you and Zane, how did you eventually get involved with Zane?
Yeah, my path, as you mentioned, started in August of 2011, and it was indeed a near-death experience. And interestingly, and there are many people that have written about these types of experiences, it literally was a complete shift for me. Within 2 weeks of the experience, I found myself downtown Cleveland, Ohio, on a Friday night, out to dinner, and doing something I had never, ever considered doing, and that was right after dinner, I took a walk down the street with my wife, and there was a psychic sitting there on the street with a table. And I literally, kind of in a mocking way, said, "Hey, why don't I do that?" to my wife. And she said, "Well, are you sure?" I said, "Yeah, why not?" And I was thinking it would give us something fun to talk about the rest of the evening. And and again, this was just a couple weeks separated from this near-death experience. And ironically, it was literally the event that kick the door open, if you will. The experience was a positive one. It was one that shook me to the core. I won't go into the details, but literally it caused me to consider just for a moment whether there was something else beyond what I had always believed and had been taught. And it, being built the way I am, it launched me on an investigation that went all the way through that fall and led me to Kundalini. It led me to a Reiki experience like Zane talked about that really was a game changer for me. That led me to Santiago, Spain at one point, where I walked the Camino de Santiago. When I came back from there, I started a meditation class, started teaching meditation, and ultimately, without going into all the detail, in the fall of 2014, I saw an offering at a local, actually it was a group of nuns here in Cleveland. I like to call them the Renegade Nuns because every program they've ever done over there seems to be more of a metaphysical, holistic type nature. But they had something called the Shaman's Walk listed in their offerings, and I had a Saturday that was open, and I decided to give it a try. And I spent the whole day in this class and late into the evening, and we finished with a fire ceremony. And I remember walking away from that evening being extremely intrigued and really connected to something that that had a great familiarity to me on some level. And again, being investigative like I am, I went on and started researching books on shamanism immediately, like the next day. And I found a book written, and I guess it's a classic. It's called The Way of the Shaman by Michael Harner. Mm-hmm. And I ordered it. And by Wednesday, I had that book. And I still remember the evening that I sat down. Everybody had gone to bed, and I opened up, and I decided to read chapter one. Well, of course, chapter one in this book was a recounting of the shamanic story from around the world and the various traditions, the origins of shamanism. And what he talks about in chapter one is the similarity in the traditions, no matter where you find yourself in the world, that the shaman traditionally was someone who would indeed journey, and he was the one who was looked upon in the village or in the tribe who could tap into those other realms. And the way that the shaman traditionally did this would be to enter through some type of a portal, and that portal could be a literal portal of going into a cave or even into a tree or into a hole. And from that point on, the shaman would then journey to a place where there was usually a river. And at that river, there would often be a boat that would be, let's say, piloted by some kind of a spirit animal. And that animal would take him down the river to a place where he would then be able to retrieve information that was needed for the person either he was doing the healing for or for the village in its entirety. And I literally had to close the book, and I started to cry. And the reason for that was, the backstory to all this was, is ever since my son was very young and old enough to listen to a story, I have every night sat next to him and told stories, and each of those stories would start out like this. Bryce and Daddy were walking in the woods. They found a big hole, and we would typically jump into the hole, and we would spin through a tunnel, and we'd land by a river. And in the river, there'd usually be a boat, and, you know, for purposes of the story for my son, in the boat would be like a giant bunny rabbit or a giant whatever, and he would paddle us down the river, and we'd end up in a place like Legoland or Skylanderland. And that's where the story would depart from what I was reading, but the similarity in what I had been telling him for years, I was now reading in this book. And I literally had to go out and take a long walk that evening, and I decided from that point on I needed to investigate further. There was something ringing very familiar and true to me about this. And this ultimately led to a workshop like the one that we have coming up, which Zane was presenting here in Cleveland. And I again sat through a weekend of training with Zane and decided on the spot that this was, that first of all, Zane was somebody I wanted to study with, and that this was definitely a calling that was coming to me.
Hmm. How cool. Near death, a hard way to get there, but, you know, how cool. I had done work in my past with quite a few near-death experience people and had interviewed a bunch of near-death experience people. And so the people that come through it come out with oftentimes amazing stories and journeys, but boy, it's a tough way to get there, seems like, from over
here. I wouldn't
Randy,
recommend
you
it.
You just made Richard speechless. It's not often that he doesn't have the next thing to say. So that in itself is an awesome thing. We have a couple of questions from the audience, like what will people be able to do after the workshop? And then two others that I think are really incredible. Do we have time, Richard? Do you have some other things you want to ask, Randy? Okay. And the one that came up that just flabbergasted me, and I don't know where even to fit it in, but are crop circles from other dimensions, or have you ever asked that question? Well, we made this speech.
Well, to First hit on the workshop details. At the end of the workshop, you will most people who have come, of course, it's little by little that we learn these traditions. It takes a period of time of learning and then a period of time of applying it. And then, of course, after we start to apply it, we must start to use it so that we clear ourselves to learn more. After this workshop in particular, people will have several ways of entering into what is best called altered space or an altered experience where they could work with or enter into a alliance with spirit. They will also know about the Pakpo, which is one of the most amazing things to actually learn because that's where all of our healing happens. Inside of this bubble that is around our body, it's like a template. And inside of it, we have an energy called Hucha. And Hucha is the heavy, sticky, harsh stuff in reality that leads to our illnesses eventually. And it also leads us to states of conflict in our own personal lives. And we have to learn to cleanse ourselves of this Hucha. But a lot of times we don't understand what Hucha is in our culture anymore. We feel tense or something, and we think that it's so negative, and we have so much build up on this concept of negative that we're afraid it will infect us, and that it's something like the personification of evil or something on that level. But what I teach everyone is that Hucha is just heaviness, and heaviness is something we can deal with. You know, in the Andes, basically, there's a metaphor. It says a box of apples is heavy. It's hard to carry that box of apples up the mountain, but once you get there, it's food. And eventually, we learn to treat Hucha that way and to treat it as food and to learn how to break down or transform these energies that are causing illness and conflict in our lives and to apply them toward our hopes and our dreams. And we will be tapping into all of that during the workshop. We'll also be tapping into several ways of cleansing, of doing basic cleansing and maintenance that we can take home and share with others. And, of course, there is an element to the workshop because of the work I do that is always undecided. And that element gets decided by the participants there. Because when you put yourself out there in this field and you are presenting something, people have come for different reasons. Some have come to learn new techniques and new ways of working with spirit, and some people have come to heal. Some people don't even know why they're there, but they know that it's important to them. So it's very important for us to leave a bit of space open to spontaneity and improvisational magic, to allow the participants to bring what they came there for, and to try to deliver what it is that they were hoping to receive. And, of course, I was speaking of Hucha a little bit ago, that energy that makes us sick and causes conflict in our lives. We don't always understand its role in our lives. And its role is to get us back into something we call Aini. And Aini means divine reciprocity or divine sharing, you know. And so this Hucha is a first step to be able to feel it and to be able to move it and to be able to then see it as a great gift. And that's the hardest thing for the mind, is to see these things that are causing our sicknesses and our conflicts in life as something wonderful and a great gift. But once we can view it that way, we are able to give that to what the Mother Earth. We call her Pachamama. And when we give her this Hucha, it is like the greatest gift for her. And she can flip through it almost like a book of our lives. And she can see all the things that we're struggling with and all the things that are causing us problems within it. And she can also see all the things that we're grateful for because it's been through our personal field, our personal energy. And then she can transform. She is the original mulcher or eater of this energy. And she's the one that teaches us to be able to do that. But she can transform it into a different energy, into a type of mother's milk that empowers us and helps us to achieve our dreams and our goals.
So I love this idea. Alliance with spirit that you talk about, and I'm going to bring some questions together to sort of answer that. When we look at these things like crop circles and Stonehenge and Machu Picchu, those sites, are they the Mother Earth sites that allow us to touch this energy more? Like Serpent Mound is very close to us. Crop circles, is that other dimensions opening that energy that you're talking about? That alignment with spirit, which I really think translates for me, alignment with Mother Earth and the issues of Mother Earth wants to teach us?
Yes, yes. Just to tack on to the last thing, by starting that relationship with Mother Earth, by giving her our hucha and then receiving that gift back, we start to understand that the Earth is a living being, that she has a personality and she has a life, and then we're a little more cautious with how we treat her. But the crop circles, places like Machu Picchu, especially Machu Picchu and the Great Serpent Mound here, there's also in a place pretty close to here called Tarleton, there's a cross mound there. These are all sacred sites. They're all sites that the ancestors discovered when they were walking through nature. And they're sites where the three worlds, what we call the three worlds, come together. In some of the sites, you have more of the underworld, which is the domain of Pachamama, our Earth Mother, and it's the domain of what we would call intuition and inspiration and art and riches. And then there's the middle world, which is where we live, and then there is the upper world, which is the super refined celestial energies of Viracocha, the creator, the architect of the universe, of the stars, of the moon and the sun. And in these places like Machu Picchu, Serpent Mound, Cross Mound, Fort Hill, and a dozen others actually spread throughout Ohio and through West Virginia, these places hold a certain type of energy. And our ancestors were very keen and very sensitive when they discovered these places. And the rituals and the ceremonies that they created to perform at those places were to help the participants fall into an energetic resonance with the already existing energy field of that place and then to expand it. And when we go to places like that, we very easily fall into trance-like states, into altered experiences. We very easily enter into another dimension, as we were talking about. And that is a very important and very easy way to learn how to step into those worlds. And also at every one of those places, we pick up certain gifts. They're like acupuncture meridians coming into the earth. And when we're there doing ceremonies and rituals, we're kind of like the acupuncture needle. We're kind of like bringing this new energy in to refresh and revive, and more than anything else, to say hi to these friends. We see them as friends, these nature beings that are out there. Now, the crop circle thing, that's a little bit of a different phenomenon altogether. I do believe that there's several different types of crop circles. I believe there are the crop circles that are created by youth, people who want to go out and create something beautiful and create a mystery and to know that they were the ones behind it. But then again, there are ones that pop up so quickly and randomly, and even ones that change, that bring through certain ideas and certain dimensions. And I do not believe that anything is outside of our Pachamama's ability to do. And I believe that no matter how a person would like to view crop circles, they all point to the fact that we are living in a time where we are wanting so desperately to touch the mysteries again. So many of the mysteries have been kind of locked away or pushed away from us. But we're now at this new time where people really want to dive into those mysteries. And it's coming out of our unconscious, out of our subconscious, these patterns and designs. And every time someone sees a crop circle, whether they think it was something made by man or something made by angels or from aliens or another dimension, it opens us up to think more, to be more accepting, and to allow more information to flood into us. So I believe they're very beautiful phenomena.
And this is slightly sidestepping. In your experience in Peru and some of these other what I'll call power spots for the moment, particularly in some of the cultures, the Peruvian culture or the Himalayas or these, you know, people in the cultures where I don't think have ever lost the connection with nature. They really live as part of nature. In a number of those areas, they oftentimes live for a really long time. And do you think part of being in the flow of nature can have a positive effect on that longevity?
Oh, definitely, without a doubt. It's when we're in the flow of nature, we start to align with her vibration, with her resonance. And she, in a sense, is one of the great architects of life itself. So when we fall into a more resonant vibration with her, we're able to heal a lot of wounds that have happened to us. We're able to grow, especially, and I'm not even speaking of shamanism in this regard, but it has been found that nature and taking people out to nature has a amazing effect on helping people heal from certain types of sexual abuse, that just being in the natural world can help us to find our place again, to help us to feel like we're part of a whole. You know, our Western ideal that we are so separated from nature and that we're almost at odds with nature and we're trying to carve our way out of her, that really puts us at odds with the entire world. That means that we go around with this idea that around every corner, something is waiting there to attack us or to harm us in some way. When we start to have a closer relationship with nature, we see this in more of its true sense. Yes, there are some things that happen that are terrible in our world, but that there is an overlying principle or an overlying design to it all. And when we start to really touch that antiquity of life itself, when we start to touch this experience of infinity, things start to heal in us. And nature, though, in an academic sense, would probably not be considered infinite. In a shamanic or in a mystical sense, we see her as infinite, as something that has always been, as something that is the basis of what we are. You know, we truly believe that our parents this life were only caretakers for us, that we came here and they have something very special to offer us, something very special to give us, and that they have this wonderful job and this very hard job of helping us become the people we are, but that their role is only that of a caretaker. And that our true parents have always been the sun and the earth, and that the sun is our true father and the earth is our true mother.
And, excuse me, you'll understand why I'm laughing when I ask this question. So do you think mom and dad at some point could get so annoyed with the kids that they're going to have to shake us off like fleas? you know,
George Carlin, yes. Yes, I do believe that is a potential. You know, I myself am an environmentalist, but a lot of times in the environmental field, we take liberties with words, and we always talk about how we're destroying her and destroying the earth. The more realistic sense is, we are destroying ourselves. We are creating an environment where our organism and organisms like us will not be able to survive. The life of the earth herself and her infinite potential to create new forms of life would continue even if we poisoned this planet so bad that our form of life couldn't sustain here anymore. She will continue regardless. So the true, we're really endangering ourselves.
Is this the kind of journey found in every society from the beginning of time, and that we each need to find our pathway? And is that what you have in your workshop? I guess I'm asking, who do you think needs your workshop?
Well, I believe that anyone who wants to have a closer walk with nature, anyone who wants to learn about themselves from this earth-centered place, anyone who would like to tap into altered states of consciousness and to figure out what those are all about, anyone who is really wanting to develop something new in themselves, to be able to see the world from a new perspective. The Inca were preoccupied with the energy world. And what I mean by that is the ancient Inca put more emphasis on their experiences of what we call living energies, or these kind of altered experiences. And they believed that those were prime in nature, that those were the true reality. And then they were very interested in how their experience of this kind of living energy was translated into this everyday world we live in, how it became experiences in our life, how a tension we felt yesterday could lead to a fight or a conflict with someone very close to us tomorrow, you know. And they were very keen on understanding those interconnections. And it was so important to them that this reality that we would all agree upon and say this is our reality of everyday life was a secondary world to them, much like we're talking about these other dimensions sound like a secondary world to us today. It was the exact opposite for them in the ancient world. But I can't speak about all, I can't speak for all cultures or what their perspective on that was, but I do believe that we were all very close to nature in the beginning, and that we lived almost fabled lives at that time, because we created technologies based directly on her, and that we were able to find little secret hidden places in the earth that created amazing phenomenon that would change resonance. There's a temple in Peru that you can actually put your back up against, and many people will have a complete realignment of their spine. And when they went there and they tested it, they actually found that the stones themselves created a tone, and that this, and they believe that the tone itself is what creates the relaxing of the skeletal muscles and the realignment of the vertebrae. So, you know, there's so many ancient mysteries out there, and I believe that, you know, our ancestors really were tapped more into that world. I believe we're tapped more into a mental world, and that we have just about pushed the mental envelope as far as it can go. And now we are begging and crying for the heart to open again, because the heart's going to bring a whole fresh realm of experiences. So I know I'm kind of jumping around, but these workshops, this one coming up, and especially the apprenticeship program, which is a traditional apprenticeship to the Takokuna, which is our word for shaman in Peru, especially in the mountainous regions of the Andes. And Pakokuna really means nature mystic. And that's where we source everything from, is the natural world around us. You know, we find resonance with her, and then we can share that peaceful resonance with others, and we can watch a predictable outcome. You know, we of course don't expect an outcome, but it becomes so predictable that it builds a faith in us. And for anyone who would like to have that type of experience, to work closer with nature, to be able to develop their own personal power in them, their own selves, so that they can offer something meaningful to the world, something meaningful to these situations, they would be the perfect person to come and be in the class, and I think they would enjoy it.
How do they sign up for the class, Randy?
Well, I'll let Randy tell you that.
Yeah, so there's this particular event is available on eventbrite.com. And if someone also would just want to reach out to me directly, I can be, and perhaps this is up on your website, Sherry, but my email is randykeller444@gmail.com, and I'd be more than happy to send information directly out to anybody that had an interest. The workshop itself will be on November 18th. That's a Saturday, and it goes from 10 in the morning till approximately 5:30, and it's at Sutnam Studios in Avon Lake, Ohio. So a couple ways. They can go to eventbrite.com and they can search for an introduction to Peruvian shamanism, or just email me directly at randykeller444@gmail.com and I'll provide the information.
RANDYKELLER 444, and we'll put that up on our site also for you.
Yes.
It is 7 o'clock and time to close, and I can't believe it. And it just, Richard, do you have any last thoughts that went so quick?
I have so many thoughts, but we must stop. We have a whole earth conversation. And heart, and
yeah,
heart awakening,
so many...
and that whole thing. Oh, that thing, that heart awakening thing, that's a show. So we'll get,
sure.
We'll talk again.
There's lots of questions I'd like to see answered too. One that we'll leave on, is there a way that people can abuse this? So that's a whole show on its own, how to abuse personal power. We're seeing that on the planet at the moment. So bringing that into alignment, I can't believe Mother Earth enjoyed that 8.1 earthquake that North Korea just created. You can't be in love with Mother Earth and do that to her. Thank you both for being here. We will have a recording of this. Where, Richard, can they get that?
About 15 minutes after I stop the show here, you'll be able to go to soundhealthoptions.com, click on the radio tab, and then click on the Blog Talk Radio Archive Player. And about 10 to 15 minutes after we end, the new show will be there. You can also go to iTunes or any of your favorite podcast aggregators and search for Sherry Edwards, and you'll find our 500-plus shows available. I have to laugh nervously when I hear that now. Over 500 shows. Amazing. And, you know, it's all around. I mean, any whatever the platform is, if you go to your podcast player of choice, you'll be able to find it. For a lot of people, iTunes. I prefer Pocket Cast myself. But it'll be there shortly. So that was really great, guys. But really, we will have a whole other conversation about heart. I think we'll Sherry and I will talk about that.
Sounds great.
Thanks,
thank
everybody. That was great. Thank you. And I don't know who we're talking to Sunday, but I know we're talking to somebody. I just can't think of who now. It'll come back. All right. Thanks again, everybody. Have a Dr. Mann, that's right. Okay. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll see you on Sunday. Thanks again, guys. Bye-bye.
Later.